And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you're watching the Stop the Tea podcast. I'm telling you right now, we are going to get into a number of different topics. As you might imagine, we're going to be talking all about Detroit. We just got back. We're back here in Terra Firma now, in the Philadelphia area. But I'm going to tell you all about the trip, some of the things we discovered, some of the things we learned. I think you'll find it very interesting. And of course, the ever popular, what are you drinking tonight? So before we get started, I do want to remind you to like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your enemies. I'm telling you right now, we are working again on getting the website up and running. And we are also working on getting an audio version of this out to all the people who may or may not be interested. So we haven't forgotten about you. I want to get a couple things off my chest before we get started. Now, first and foremost, let's talk about the World Series. Now, I told you last episode that I'm probably going to be paying a little bit more attention to this World Series than I have to baseball in general in years. That has been the case. I have to say that the Dodgers have played incredibly well. They've played and pitched incredibly well. So congratulations to them to this point. Tonight, we are recording in the middle of game five. So, the Yankees are currently up, last I checked, 4-0, and they are down 3-1 in the series. Gerrit Cole is on the mound. He's pitching well. But let's be fair. Freddie Freeman's been tremendous. Mookie Blaylock has been just as good. And Ohtani has been fantastic. He's led in a way that that you wouldn't expect, especially since he's gotten injured. His presence, his day-to-day presence in that lineup has been very, very inspiring, I think, to the Dodgers and their players. So kudos to him. Kudos to them. I will say this, though. The Yankee fans who essentially assaulted Mookie Blaylock in the field last night, trying to rip that ball out of his glove. Come on, guys. Look, as a fan, you're there to watch. Clap, cheer, boo, do whatever you need to do, but keep your hands to yourself, all right? I mean, this guy's out here trying to make a living in his profession. It's one thing to yell what you want to yell at him, but don't interfere in the game, all right? That's just being an asshole. Keep your mess to yourself, please. And secondly, I have to say the Eagles. Boy, oh boy. Now, as most of you know, I was in Detroit this past weekend, so the Eagles game against the Cincinnati Bengals is on tape, and I will review that tomorrow. But I did see that Detroit team in person. Very impressive team. But I will say this. I owe a huge apology once again to Coach Nick Sirianni. He has had his team ready to go ever since the debacle of the game where he basically went after his own fans here in Philadelphia. It's been fascinating. I mean, this team is definitely playing not only for him, but for themselves. So I got to give Coach Sirianni a ton of credit because this thing could have gone off the rails, oh my gosh, 3 weeks ago. And they have started to find their way. They may be one of the best teams in the conference the way they're playing right now. Time will tell. But kudos to Jalen Hurts. Kudos to Coach Sirianni. Kudos to both sides of the ball and both coordinators. This is a team that's really starting to kind of find itself. And with any luck, the Eagles will continue to do that. And it could be a very, very exciting end of the season for them. So we're looking forward to that. And with that, let's get into tonight's episode. Detroit, My first stop, our first stop in Detroit, was the Motown Museum. Folks, I got to tell you, if you haven't been to Detroit, go. If you have been to Detroit and you've never been to the Motown Museum, do yourself a favor and go. It is tremendous. Look, I'm going to refer to my notes here, guys, but I'm telling you, it's filled with all sorts of artifacts. It's so well done, so well kept. Just a little history. Everybody and their mother has heard Motown songs. Everybody and their mother knows Motown songs. I mean, it's in some ways, it is the quintessential American music. It's as American as Elvis Presley and apple pie. You cannot get away from Motown's influence, not only on this country, but in the world. This company was founded in August 20th of 1959 by Berry Gordy. And Berry Gordy, it's fascinating. He purchased this house on West Grand Boulevard. Now, the house that he purchased, the address is 2648 West Grand Boulevard. Now, this is the house that you see in all the pictures, the one that's white facade in the front with the blue writing, Hitsville, USA, talking about Motown's success and influence on the music industry. This house was purchased by Berry Gordy in 1959, he got a loan of $800 from his family. Now, interesting thing about his family, you learn all of this on the tour, is that his family was a very well-to-do Black family in Detroit. And I think there were 8 children in the family. And if you were a Gordy, you had to work. The family had multiple businesses. They had a grocery store. I think they had a publication. They had about 3 or 4 different businesses in Detroit. And if you didn't work for one of the family businesses as a Gordy child, you actually had to work for someone else. But either way, you had to be bringing in money. And the family had this savings club. So everyone would put money, mother, father, all the kids would put money into this quote-unquote savings club. And at that point, after you put your money in, whether it was a year, 5 years, 10 years later, you could always have the right to take any money that you would put in out. But if you needed more than what you would put in, you had to go to the family, make your case, and then you could borrow more than what you put in from the family. They would literally have to vote on it, and the vote had to be unanimous. So this $800 that Berry got from his family was more than he put in, and they made a formal contract. They gave him the $800. They loaned him the $800, and he had to pay back within a year at 6% interest in 1959. Fascinating stuff. So he does that. Motown eventually ended up being comprised of 8 different homes. Essentially, Motown was started in a residence. That's one of the things that's most fascinating about it. Started in a residence, and it ended up being 6 homes on one side of the street, the side of the street with the famous building, and then 2 homes across the street. That comprised the enterprise of Motown Records. And the strange thing is, they were one of the few corporations that built horizontally, house, rather than vertically, skyscraper, or commercial building. Fascinating stuff. Now, Motown stayed in that original location from 1959 to 1968. 1968, they ended up moving to Woodward Boulevard, something like that, and to a much more commercial building. And they stayed there 3 years before they go to eventually Los Angeles. They relocate in 1972 in Los Angeles. And that's because at that point, Berry is making movies with Diana Ross. There's much more of an entertainment connection. They're more than a music company at that point. He's really trying to kind of carve a foothold into the entertainment industry beyond music. So they relocate to Los Angeles, which is where Berry Gordy lives to this day. 1972, they moved. That initial building, that Hitsville, USA building, the famous building, I'll put a picture of it. You've seen it in the back of the video that I posted on the socials, but I'll put a picture up at some point also. That was not only Berry Gordy's like living quarters, but also it was the home of Studio A. Studio A is where the vast majority of all Motown hits from artist to artist to artist were recorded. And they take you in this tour through not only the house, but into Studio A. It is unbelievable. I mean, you're literally standing where history was made over and over and over again. It is a tremendous tour, I got to tell you. Tamla was the name of the original record label in 1959 when Berry Gordy started Motown, what became Motown. As it turns out, Motown itself, it was kind of created a year later, in 1960. So everyone, as you know, knows Motown songs. But one of the most fascinating things about Motown, in 1961 alone, I'm going to give you the lineup. This is the people they signed. Gordy signed in 19... We all know about Smokey Robinson. We all know about the Miracles. They were essentially the same group. They basically were the first foothold and basically had the first hits for Motown. But in 1961 alone, Motown signed Marvin Gaye, The Temptations, The Supremes, and a young man named Stevelin Morris, who we all know worldwide as Stevie Wonder. Motown signed him at 11 years old. Think about that. He's 11 years old in Detroit, and they signed him. I have no idea how Motown, I got to research this, but how did Motown not get their hands on Aretha Franklin? That I don't understand, because she is Detroit royalty. Anyway, by the mid-60s, Motown became the largest independent record manufacturer of 45s in the world. Now, 45s, most of you don't know this. Some of you may know this. Who knows? There are LPs, which are albums. They're, you know, like this size. And they're albums. They're 33.5 RPM, revolution per minute. 45s, smaller. They're about like this. And that's what you would release singles on. It's 45 RPM, 45 revolutions per minute. So it plays at a faster speed. So Motown became the largest producer in the world by the mid-60s of 45, simply because they had so many artists producing so many hits that they could produce and manufacture those 45s in-house and sell those on the global market. It was a tremendous source of income for them. Now, we talked about some of the original artifacts that they have. Some of the things they have in there are furniture, recording equipment. There's an 1876 Steinway piano that's in Studio A that's still there to this day and has been preserved. They also have cigarette machines and candy vending machines that still contain the contents of those cigarettes and candy bars from decades ago. It is unbelievable. Funny story about the candy machine. Now, the candy machine, as most of you know, sometimes whenever you have a vending machine of any kind, different products can go in different slots. They get moved from time to time depending on when they're refilled. Now, with the candy machine, though, there was one thing that could not be moved no matter what. And that was the position of the Baby Ruth candy bar. Now, the Baby Ruth candy bar happened to be the favorite candy of Stevie Wonder. Remember, Stevie's 11 years old when he signs. He's 14 years old, I think. I think he's 14 when he comes out with Fingertips. I mean, just an unbelievable prodigy. So Motown takes care of him in every way that they can. So people will leave dimes on top of the candy vending machine, and the Baby Ruth candy bar could not be moved whenever the candy machine was being refilled. It always had to be the fourth position from the right so that Stevie could grab, if he wanted, if he needed to, a dime from the top of the machine, put it in the vending machine, count over four slots, pull the lever and grab his favorite candy bar, the Baby Ruth. Unbelievable. Guys, if you have not been on the Motown tour, it is absolutely worth every minute of your time. They do a tremendous job. And they're about to build a new facility that's really going to modernize everything that they have. I can't wait to see what that's going to be. Now, folks, I have something to tell you. There was an artist that I met named Rob Cameron, and I'm going to pause this for 2 seconds so I can get his piece of work so I can show it to you in person. Hang on 2 seconds.